Macbeth has a long reputation not only of being a play about evil, but also being an evil play.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 182, The Scottish Play. Almost 2 years ago on podcast 91, Jennifer Lee Carroll talked to us about her first mystery, Interred with Their Bones, also known as The Shakespeare Secret, outside the U.S. Well, Jennifer is back with a new mystery featuring her scholar, director, sleuth, heroine, Kate Stanley. The new book is called Haunt Me Still in the U.S. Everywhere else, it's known as The Shakespeare Curse, and it's a creepy mystery whodunit that deals with the various legends surrounding the script and the origin of William Shakespeare's Macbeth.
I wanted Kate to investigate the Shakespeare mysteries that I find most interesting. And Macbeth has a long reputation not only of being a play about evil, but also being an evil play. Especially if you're in the theater. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wanted to play with that. She's a skeptical and rational person, and I wanted to put her in a position that would sort of force her to the edge of the envelope, to actually look at the things happening around her and think, is this just human evil, or is there something else going on here? My heroine, Kate Stanley, is a young American theater director who works mostly in the UK.
Which is another great fantasy right there.
Exactly. I could give her, for me, people often ask me if Kate is me, because she's an ex-academic, I'm an ex-academic, and that just makes me laugh. And you know, the first answer is, well, yes, she is, but so is everybody else in the book, including the killers.
Right, yes. But I was fascinated by the kind of, you start off with the theme that knowledge is dangerous, which I thought was really great and sort of counterintuitive. Great for a mystery, but counterintuitive for an academic, you know?
Oh, but knowledge is dangerous.
Is it? I thought this, isn't that what we thirst for, what we long for?
Well, of course, but that doesn't mean it isn't dangerous. Look at some of the most advanced knowledge we have in the world is how to build an atomic bomb.
Ah.
That's dangerous.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that we should stop seeking for it, but great knowledge has always been dangerous. And, you know, and the established institutions in the world have really regarded it as dangerous.
Right.
Well, AKA the Catholic Church.
but can't knowledge quell superstition? Isn't superstition dangerous? I guess that's because there's so much superstition about the Scottish play.
Exactly. I mean, ignorance is, I would say, equally dangerous, but in a different way.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I'm not saying that, you know, because knowledge is dangerous, we should eschew it. And certainly it can be used as a weapon against ignorance and superstition.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the more you know, the more you know you don't know also.
Right. Yes.
And being in a place of unknowing is always a scary one. And you put human beings in a place of fear or uncertainty and they become very dangerous. So, you know, in a way, I also, in those beginning lines, I wanted to bring up some philosophical ideas, but I also wanted to, you know, sort of toy with a long history I'm toying with Genesis in those first lines and the whole idea of creation and some of the old ideas about magic.
Mm-hmm.
Magic used to be almost inseparable, well, not almost, entirely inseparable from science. And science is, the act of, or the pursuit of knowledge, really. Magic used to be the pursuit of knowledge. It was just a different kind of knowledge. And magic in Shakespeare's day was all about trying to recover and reconstruct the ancient divine language that God used when he created the world. And there was a feeling that, you know, if you could find that language and you could pronounce it just right, with the right words in the right order, Not that you could become God. It's not like you could say, fiat lux, let there be light, and there would be light. But that you could approach that, and you might be able to fix what was wrong with the world in time for the second coming. It was a very apocalyptic idea in among some very highly intellectual circles. So that's, you know, I was sort of pointing in that direction, not that you need to know that when you read the first lines, but...
Well, and just that phrase and that idea sort of sparked all of those things as I was reading it, which was great. This book deals with the mystery of the existence of a first draft of Macbeth.
Yes, and also with the possibility that there is a curse on Macbeth, which is believed in many theatrical circles. I mean. What got me started in this is a fascination, you know, and you know this, you're an actor, that in many theatrical circles, you cannot say the word Macbeth, you can't name the two lead characters, and you cannot quote the play beyond what's absolutely necessary for rehearsal and performance in the space of a theater. Because there's some sense that, and this goes back to old ideas of what black magic or just even any magic is, there's some sense that in the mouths of trained actors, people who really know how to speak, that these words are dangerous, and that they'll, you quote Macbeth in a theater when you're not supposed to, and you somehow conjure up some kind of a dark force that gets loose, and all kinds of mayhem will happen. And there's a long belief that this has caused real disasters in the theatrical world. Not just the failure of productions, but also it's a very violent play in which, at the end, the character Macbeth has a sword fight with the character Macduff. And there are a number of occasions in history when one or the other of those actors has stabbed the other one, sometimes fatally. There's a story that Abraham Lincoln was obsessed with this play in the couple of months before his assassination and quoted it over and over. And read it aloud to his friends. And so, you know, there's a sort of people in theater history have just archived all of these disastrous things that have happened when people haven't toed the line with this curse. And I find that interesting, really interesting that otherwise rational and skeptical people will suddenly obey the outlines of the taboo. You know, and not say it, or when they do, go through the sort of elaborate. It's almost like a spell. The things that you have to do and say when you to counter the curse, mm-hmm. if you accidentally invoke it. So, I had fun trying to figure out where this superstition or idea came from, and how legit it seemed to be. And the more I poked into it, the more mysterious, actually, it became. And I thought that this would be a great place for Kate to get involved with this play. You know, and then I've known as an academic for a while that that the play really isn't the play that Shakespeare wrote, the play that's left to us. The first time it appears in print is in the first folio, which was printed in 1623, and that's, I think, 7 years after Shakespeare's death. Mm-hmm. And there are traces in the play as we have it that show that it was tinkered with before it was printed. And when scholars have looked into it, it looks like somebody updated it or changed it before it was printed. And what they did was add the character Hecate, who's the queen of the witches, and some of the funny rhyming stuff that some of the most famous stuff we know mm-hmm. may well not be Shakespeare. It may be a late edition.
Oh.
We don't know that because we know it was changed, but we don't know what the original looked like, except that the witches were probably a little bit different.
Weren't all the plays sort of tinkered with?
They've all been tinkered with, but a number of them, especially the most famous ones, were out in quarto editions during Shakespeare's lifetime, and you could sort of see what looks like it's actors messing around with it or memorize or recalling it from memory, and what looks real. Macbeth, there's no trace of it ever being played before ever in Shakespeare's lifetime. There's no earlier version of it that we've got. And so what I, you know, what I find interesting is that at the heart of it, you know, it's a really eerie tale of demonic evil as well as human evil. And it's the first time that anyone put that kind of demonic evil into witchcraft on the English stage. Before this, witches were sort of old comic characters. They were village scolds. And Shakespeare all of a sudden takes a lot of the sort of darkening ideas about witchcraft in Europe at the time and puts them on the stage in what can be a very terrifying production. So in a way, you know, Macbeth is the first great piece of horror literature in modern Europe, sort of the forerunner to Stephen King.
I'm Richard Harris, science correspondent for NPR, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
It's June, the lusty month of June, and we're going back to San Diego Repertory Theater in San Diego, California, for only 8 performances of the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised, from June 11th to June 20th. And then on June 22nd, we zip across the country to begin our 3-week run of completely Hollywood abridged at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C., running until July 11th. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for specific venue and ticket information. And now back to Jennifer Lee Carroll, author of Haunt Me Still, or The Shakespeare Curse. One of the intriguing plot points about her book is that there just might be a previously unknown first draft of Macbeth that contains actual demonic spells.
One of the things that I got started thinking was, well, you know, if Shakespeare's doing this really new thing with witchcraft and making it really dark, And there seems to be this feeling in the theater that it works like a spell of black magic. Well, how much did he know about magic? And we don't really know. And, you know, those words, we don't know, are manna from heaven for a novelist. It's really lovely to know a little bit about a historical situation, but to have a lot of loose ends, because that's where the novelist can jump in and posit, what if this is what happened? And that's a place that I love to be. So anyway, I started asking, what did we know? What do we know about what Shakespeare knew about magic and what he thought about it? And the more I started to look, you know, magic, and specifically the conjuring of demons, it runs throughout Shakespeare's work from literally the very first play, which is what we call it, the Henry VI Part II, but that was probably his first play, all the way through to the end, The Tempest. Mm. And he seems to have been really fascinated by that and to have been in some ways a lot more accurate than most people were putting that stuff on the stage. And what got me really interested poking at it was at the Shakespeare history was that if you look at it through that long history of writing about conjuring demons, he's Shakespeare. He's very skeptical in a lot of ways, and he pokes fun at it. But every time somebody conjures up a demon actually arrives and speaks. And when a demon speaks and prophesies something, it always comes true. It never comes true in the way humans think it's supposed to come true, but it does come true. Mm. So there's a sense in which the way Shakespeare writes about it, there are such things as demons. They can and do play evil or, at the very least, amoral tricks on humans. And they have a sort of power in this world. But on the other hand, any human being who thinks he or she can control these creatures is pretty much shown to be a dupe of them or, you know, just an out-and-out fraud.
One of the things that I loved about the book was that it brought all of these things into play, and unlike the previous book, it sort of began in a sort of Agatha Christie kind of creepy mystery kind of a way, which I really liked. You know, you're bringing all the characters together in an exotic location where they're all sort of trapped, and there's a threat, and that was all very cool, and then I loved how you worked into the other mystery, the other Shakespeare mystery that I'm fascinated by, and I suspect you are too, which is that the authorship question. Perhaps Shakespeare had access to the dark side, and maybe that's the source of his genius?
You know, people have always wondered where his genius comes from, and there is no answer to that. Yeah. But on the one hand, there is no answer, and that has fueled people coming up with all kinds of answers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just seemed to me that anytime you're really seriously delving into the wonder of whether something like Macbeth can put dark forces in play, and you're wondering whether Shakespeare knew the great magicians of the time and how much he knew about their work. And it sort of seemed to flow naturally into having to ask the question, where did his genius come from?
And magic seems to be as plausible an answer as the Earl of Oxford. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So,
exactly.
Where do you come down? Where do you personally come down on the issue of Shakespeare's authorship?
I come down, you're talking to a mystery writer. I come down on the fact that it's a mystery. You know, the way I often think about it, and I deal with this a lot in the first book, Interred with Their Bones, which is also the Shakespeare secret. But I personally think, you know, if you put Shakespeare on trial in a civil court in which the standard is the preponderance of evidence, then it was the guy from Stratford.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the evidence we have points at him.
Mm-hmm.
However, we don't have a whole lot of evidence, and there are some interesting gaps in the record, enough that there's just a sliver, you know, there's a sliver of darkness through that door. And so if you put him on trial for being the author in a criminal court, and the standard of evidence is beyond a reasonable doubt, I would have to say not guilty.
Uh-huh.
You know, there seems to me a reasonable possibility that it could have been somebody else, or at least a reasonable sliver of possibility.
How do you treat people that you know who genuinely believe that there's a curse on the Scottish play? Are you like me, and do you just go up behind them and go, Macbeth?
I don't. You know, I've been in the theater enough myself that I steer clear of that one. I didn't worry about it much when I was writing, because I'm writing in my house, and my house isn't a theater, and I'm not really an actor, although I have been a director. But I guess, you know, when it comes to anything I don't know and don't understand, whether it's religion or whether it's something like this superstition, I believe in tolerance and respect. So I back off and let it go.
Very nice. You are a better man than I.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your demonic spells via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com, and our Reduced Shakespeare Company fan page at facebook.com. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, aging wizard Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Seth Bate. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to science reporter Richard Harris from National Public Radio. You've been hearing him a lot recently discussing the BP oil spill. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 182/546 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I sort of revel in the world's mysteries and the world's wonders. I don't feel the need to clamp the lid down closed and say, ha, I've got this solved, when in fact I don't.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.